The It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Welcome to It's Time for Coffee. I'm Jeanette Tapley, your host and internet bestie. Here on It's Time for Coffee, we will help each other find joy, sisterhood, and lasting friendship. We are all about Bible-based love and teachings to help us grow into the friends we long to be and to nourish the relationships that we already have. Now, I'm not a theologian or a Bible scholar. I'm just your pal, Jeanette, here to help you and encourage you. Join me each week as we sit down with a friend to be encouraged and reminded that we are heard, valued, and never alone, no matter what season we find ourselves in. So grab your cup, fill it up, because friend, it's time for coffee. Hey y'all, I am so excited to share today's conversation with you. It is with my new friend, Nicole Zazowski, and we are talking about her book, What If It's Wonderful? I am just excited to talk about celebrating, and we get into what toxic positivity is, how we can grieve, and what if it's wonderful. How can we choose joy in light of everything that's surrounding us? I think you're going to love this conversation, and I cannot wait for you to meet Nicole. So grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I'm so excited to be sitting down with Nicole Zazowski. We are talking about her new book, What If It's Wonderful? And this is an invitation to release our fears and to choose joy and to celebrate, and to find the courage to celebrate. Nicole, I'm so excited to be having this conversation with you today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you too.
This will be so fun. The first question I always ask is, what's in your cup? Are you drinking anything while we're having coffee today?
Ooh, you know what? I did leave my coffee downstairs, but that is actually a perfect snapshot of what my coffee usually looks like every day. It's like the same cup that just gets warmed up 400 times throughout the day. And by dinner, I might finish it or just dump it in the sink at that point.
That's right. I know. At what point is it like warmed up too many times? That's like the perfect question for moms. Like, how many times is too many times to warm this cup of coffee?
Yes, there is a point where I think we've changed and I don't even want to think about what's happening chemically there in a microwave, but where we've definitely changed the taste over the course of time.
That's right. What is your go-to coffee order? Like, if you're out and about and you go to a coffee shop, what's your go-to order?
A couple of years ago, it used to always be an almond milk latte. I prefer iced coffee even in the winter, but I live in Connecticut just outside New York City. So there's some pretty bone chilling days in the winter. And if it's a day I just can't get warm, I will opt for hot. But taste wise, I really love iced.
Yeah, that's so good. Do you have like a specific flavor or anything that you go for? Like, I have a specific one that like I'll judge each shop by, like, because that's like, you know what you want it to taste like. Or do you just get like black coffee? Okay. Mine has been an lavender oat milk latte. That's like my go-to. And it has been such a treat. Yeah. Everywhere I go, hot or cold, it's just like, it's my go-to and it is delicious.
I have to try the lavender. Yeah. No, I normally don't add any flavor. I just do it plain, but lavender sounds very festive. I like that.
I just really enjoy it. It's like not too sweet. And my husband's like, it tastes like you're eating flowers.
Well, that's not always bad.
Nicole, will you tell us just a little bit more about you? And then we're going to talk all about your book and celebrating, which I love to celebrate. So I'm excited. So first, please tell us all about you.
Yes, I am a wife and mom of three. I have a son who is almost six, another son who just turned two, and my daughter turned one today. So we're celebrating her today. And I'm also a marriage and family therapist. I have a practice here in Connecticut, and sometimes I get to travel and do intensives around the country. And certainly speak along with that at different churches around the country. And I have written two books. We're mainly going to talk about my second one, What If It's Wonderful? And that just about occupies my time. So,
as if the motherhood wasn't enough, and then being a therapist, and then being an author, right? Those are three very full plates. So I'm so thankful for your time.
Oh, this is going to be fun. I'm excited to talk with you.
Let's dive in by, like, let's talk about toxic positivity, because I think that there's, we kind of live in two camps. I feel like this, like, fighting for joy on, like, a daily basis, especially the last couple of years, like, finding joy in daily life can be hard. Or there's, like, this toxic positivity where we're just not going to address the hard things. We're only going to, like, try to be like happy. So can you define toxic positivity for us real quick?
Yes, I'm sure there's many definitions out there, but the easiest, simplest one that I usually use is toxic positivity just dismisses pain. Whereas joy is able to trust God's promises or have hopefulness in the midst of pain. And so toxic positivity is not able to sit with both realities. So it's not able to sit in pain and understand that, yes, the pain is still real. And there are good things happening in this season that feels really hard too. Or the reality that what is dark today is not going to be dark forever. And so it's a very polarizing perspective, because we can either have joy or either have pain. And so we're just going to find a way to find a silver lining, you know, I call it drawing silver linings on a cloud that need to just be clouds. Like, there's some things in life that need to just be hard. And not that we can't have a healthy and constructive way of moving through those hard things. I think that's where a lot of the joy can be found, but it's not calling a painful thing good.
Mm. I think that's so, so wise, because yeah, sometimes we need to sit in that, like, I almost said sit in that suck, but that sounds a little bit, I mean, it's true though. Sometimes we have to sit in the pain and sit in that for a minute or for a while so that we can then kind of crawl out of it and be appreciative of the next season that we get to enter.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I was not raised to sit in that. I was no shame to my parents, but I think that just a lot of us weren't raised to kind of cry, like, just that, like, stop crying, get up and go, like, just like kind of rush past those big feelings. And so learning that as an adult and teaching my kids that in the same kind of breath has been a challenge, because it is very much like, okay, you're allowed to be sad, you're allowed to feel these feelings, and then we're going to process this and we're going to try to go to the next stage. What does that look like? What does processing the hard times and then, like, moving past it, but moving forward? What does that look like?
Yeah, a phrase I often use with myself as a reminder and others as well, when we talk about this, is just a good rule of thumb is to connect before you correct. So exactly what you just beautifully described with your kids, like validating the feeling and validation. I think people are sometimes afraid to do that, but validation doesn't mean that you agree with the threat or agree with the feeling or even understand it for yourself. Maybe it's a different feeling than you would feel if you were in that position. But just saying, I hear you, let me make sure that I'm getting this right. It sounds like you're feeling this way because of this. Is that, you know, you're sort of checking in and making sure that you're hearing it correctly. And that just makes whoever you're talking to feel heard. And then depending on the situation, that can be the beginning place of joy, because then we're more open when we feel heard to considering different possibilities or problem solving, or looking to the future with a hopeful gaze versus assuming that, you know, the other shoe is going to drop, or there's no good things in my life presently or waiting for me in the future.
Yeah. And so as we kind of climb out of that, and as we look for a hopeful future, we're also looking for the day-to-day celebrations in life. And I love that you name this a spiritual discipline. We talk about fasting and prayer, and those are disciplines. But then we also have to look into celebrating. And like we were saying before we started recording, like there was times of celebration in the Bible. So like we obviously see that like celebrating is huge for the heart of the Lord. So what does celebrating, how can we move into celebration right now, like in our lives?
Yes. So to be honest, when I was researching this, I was a little bit annoyed that celebration was a discipline. I thought, does that have to be hard too? Like there's enough that rhythms and routines in our life that we have to be disciplined about incorporating. And yes, those things bring us joy too. But I just wanted celebration to come naturally and be easy. And then I realized when I wait for celebration to be a natural reaction and not a discipline, that is putting the locus of control all in my circumstances. And I think this is why for years I felt really anxious around transitions, particularly transitions like a new year, where we talk a lot about expectations and goals and dreams. I'm not kidding. I would have, and I don't throw this term around because I know people really suffer from panic disorder and panic attacks, but I would have what I would consider close to a panic attack. And I realized it was because I was walking into a transition feeling like, well, I hope I get to celebrate this year, or I hope I get to celebrate this season, because I believed that celebration could only come on the far side of a dream realized or a goal achieved or some sort of change in circumstances. And so then when I started looking at it as a discipline, I thought, okay, this is actually good news for us, because I don't have to wait for a perfect set of circumstances. Celebration is about, you know, creating a beautiful life you have with God. It's not about adding something to your life. Mm-hmm. It's about not missing the very beautiful things that are already there. And in the last third of my book, I really go into a lot of practices and what this can look like on a daily basis. You mentioned a great one when you mentioned what celebration looks like in the Bible. All of the Old Testament celebrations were really about remembrance, remembering who God is, pieces of his character, and remembering a significant moment, sort of returning to those watershed breakthrough moments where he delivered them, or he provided for them in a significant way.
Yeah, and I think those are the times that it's easy to celebrate, right? Birthdays and dreams accomplished or realized, like you said, which I love. Those are easy to celebrate, but what are the day-to-day celebrations that we can bring to our minds to celebrate? We're talking in church right now about thankfulness and like having a heart of thankfulness and like rejoicing. And our pastor has had us like set reminders, and I can't do it because they always go off during interviews. Like, I'm not kidding. So like I have to be really mindful about when I set my alarms. But there's times to like sit and like what he has challenged us to do is like set these alarms. And as they go off, say like, today is the day the Lord has made. Today I will rejoice and be glad in it. And just like to have a heart of gratitude and thanksgiving. But I also want to look at that as like, I want a heart of celebration. I love to celebrate my people. Like it's fun for me to celebrate my friends, but I want to celebrate God. And so tell me some ways that we can like focus our heart daily on celebrating the good things that God has given us.
I'm really excited to hear the way that you talked about that, because one of my reasons for writing this book was not only my personal story and how it led me to this topic, but and having the courage to celebrate, but also I've grown up in the church my whole life, and I realized that I had no context for what it looked like to engage with God in the light of my joy. I sort of pictured God being so present. You know, our relationship was so intimate and close in my pain. And then I sort of pictured him walking me over that difficult ground to my place of celebration and saying, okay, have fun. You let me know when you need me, you know, like, and I was sad that I had no picture. So that's just a side note to your question. But as I listened to you talk, I got excited because one of the practices daily that I do talk about is Thanksgiving. And again, this doesn't require that anything in your life changes. But Thanksgiving is such a good way, a daily practice to celebrate, or multiple times a day, because it celebrates the gift with the giver. So this is how we engage with God in our celebration. One of my favorite stories in the Bible that illustrates this is when Jesus heals the 10 lepers. And the 10 lepers can see him coming from afar, if you're not familiar with the story. And they have nothing to lose. They're outcasts in society. They're ostracized from their communities. They're physically and emotionally miserable. There's probably some spiritual ramifications of their illness as well. And so they just call out to Jesus, have mercy on us. And he instructs them to visit the temple, which is traditionally the first step that one takes after being physically healed. So they have to take him on faith that on the way to the temple, they're going to be physically healed. And sure enough, you know, you can imagine walking with 9 other friends who have the same condition you do. They start to see their own healing in the faces of their friends. Their skin is smooth. They can feel their bodies. They can... they recognize their own healing and experience it. And you can imagine how relieved and excited they would be. And we can, you know, the Bible doesn't tell us what they felt or what their reaction was, but we can imagine that they all felt grateful. But only one returned to thank Jesus. And Jesus said, you know, kind of this interesting response, well, weren't all 10 healed? And of course, he knows they were, and that's not a bid for our praise. Jesus is fine. Self-esteem is just A-okay without our praise, but it's a chance we get to connect with the giver of our gift. Yeah. And so, you know, you and I can't walk into a boutique without seeing a gratitude journal or a gratitude jar. And what gratitude does, I would call that half the equation. So it absolutely impacts our joy. It is a celebration, but it helps us note. So it changes the way we see, and it helps us name, put words to the things that we're grateful for. But what most people don't realize is that Thanksgiving actually pours like gasoline on the joy that we get from gratitude, because we then get to share it with the giver of the gift. And so that's absolutely a wonderful practice of celebration in your prayers and also in our interpersonal relationships. It makes such a difference when we don't just go through our day being like, I really like that friend of mine, or I'm so grateful she's in my life. And we actually go through being able to share that with them. And if it's face to face, it's even more joy for both them and us.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network and is sponsored in part by
I want to break in real quick to ask you a simple question. Did you know that I wrote a book? Well, I did. It's called It's Time for Jesus, and it is a 30-day devotional all about finding the truth of who you are right where you are. It is kind of like a mix of my journals and my prayer journals and my crying out to the Lord with Bible stories and Veggie Tales and some Disney stuff wrapped in there. Anyways, it's a devotional for you from me, just leaning in to who God created us to be and reminding you that God is our ultimate friend. I hope that you'll go check it out. It is on Amazon and I will have it linked for you in the show notes below. Okay, go check it out. I think you will love it. And now back to today's show. You mentioned your own story. Would you mind sharing just a little bit of your story and why this was so important, like, for you to write and go into on your own?
Yes. So I walked through a season that can largely be characterized by change and loss for many years. My 20s were mostly, there were a lot of beautiful things that happened in that season too, but they were hard. A lot of waiting, a lot of loss, a lot of unexpected change. And I outline a lot of that in my first book called From Lost to Found. But I noticed as I was emerging from that season, I don't think our seasons are ever all pain or all joy, but it was a season characterized by more good news and some breakthrough in some of the circumstances that we were walking. And I noticed that I was very, along with my joy was very accompanied by fear. I could not trust any good news. It felt like celebration always came with a catch. And I was not able to fully engage it and celebrate through Thanksgiving with God or through savoring the experience. That's another practice I talk about in the book, because it felt too scary. I was sure that the more I held, the more that could be taken away from me. And so when you go through something painful, there's the loss, the event, or the difficult relationship, or, you know, the triggering, the thing that triggers the pain. And then there's the cost. And the cost, to me, is the impact to our identity and sense of safety. And there were a lot of costs in that story, but one that was slower, I was slower to realize, was this impact to my joy and willingness to celebrate.
Yeah. I love that you were able to walk it all out and then like surrender. And that's, I think that's the hardest part about celebrating, is there's a surrender to our circumstances. And I think that is probably the hardest part, because man, surrender's hard, and celebrating even when we don't know the outcome, or even if it's not the outcome that we had hoped for, to celebrate God and his goodness, and to believe that line of like, even if, that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say, like, even if, like, I have faith and I will celebrate my God, even if. And so it like gives me hope, but it also like, there's like this stingy part of my heart that's like, oh, but that's so hard.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of vulnerability and joy. Brené Brown has done a ton of research on vulnerability, obviously, and she would say that joy is the most vulnerable feeling we feel, which is not what we typically think. We think of painful feelings being more vulnerable, but joy is automatically accompanied by the possibility of disappointment or loss. And so to be able to hold it is a vulnerable experience. You're absolutely right. And I think what you were talking about, you bring up a good point with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I think, you know, there is a difference between having expectations in the sense of having demands and having an expectant heart. they had an expectant heart. Mm-hmm. Their framework, which I use in my own life and even with clients all the time, is I know that God can. So I trust, that's basically saying I trust his character. I trust that God is who he says he is. I believe that he will. I'm going to have an expectant heart.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pray with hope that he will. And then the third thing was, but even if he doesn't, he is still God and what he says is still true. And that is where I'm going to invest my ultimate hope. I do have hope that this is going to turn out the way I want. I do have desires. it's not like we pretend that we don't have a desired outcome. I think God wants our real hearts.
Right.
But to know that it doesn't change God and it doesn't change his promises and it doesn't change the ultimate promise that what is dark today is not going to be dark forever. And in the book, I contrast that with a story, a lesser known character that we don't often talk about, Herod Antipas, I think you pronounce his name. And he was just so excited to meet Jesus because of what Jesus could do for him. And Jesus was to him simply the power to his own plans and agenda. And when Jesus obviously did not cooperate with that agenda, he became very angry. And his opinions about Jesus all hinged on whether he got his own way. And that might be an extreme story, but I think I really had to check my heart when I read that story because, or it revealed what was in my heart, because I think often without realizing it, we can hold our own vision or desires so tight that they can, you know, whether we get it or not, the outcome of those desires has the ability to change how we think or feel about God. And that's where, you know, the joy is in the wrong place in our hearts.
Yeah. I that story is so telling of like who I need or want Jesus to be on that specific day for sure.
Yes.
What was writing a book about celebration like in the midst of a pandemic?
Yes. I took my title to the face every time I sat down to write it. And the title came to me really early. It doesn't always happen like that. With my first book, we had a working title and then it kind of got finalized at the end of the process. But this one was there from the beginning. And it was such a helpful question to confront when I sat down to write. Because it was a really, I'll just be honest, it was a really discouraging year in a lot of ways. A lot of really beautiful things were happening and I had a lot of opportunities to practice what I was researching and what I was wrestling with and what I ultimately wrote. But what was so sweet and rich was I got to have conversations with so many different people about the topics inside the book and realized, oh, your story might be very different from mine. And I go first in sharing vulnerably my story in the book. But not one person I talked to didn't have their own version of the pain that I was wrestling with and the desire to have the courage to celebrate even in the midst of what's been a really hard couple years for a lot of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that question to ask yourself every day, like, what if it's wonderful? Like, can I celebrate? Can I walk this out with the expectation that like, it could be really good. It could be really, really good. What role does our community and our relationships play as we are on this journey to celebrate daily?
Oh, that's a really beautiful question. I a couple things are coming to mind. One of the practices I talk about in the book is the importance of ritual, just a regular mm-hmm. celebration. And the reason that's significant is we don't celebrate based on our feelings. We celebrate because it's time. And what that does, like if you had a Sabbath practice that you did every week, often I think we tend to focus on what you shouldn't do on Sabbath, like what you should take out of Sabbath rather than what you should put in to make the day feel really special, whether that's a significant meal or some sort of treat or a way that you spend time together as a family. But I think the role of community in that can be really beautiful. So gathering with the same people to remember collectively God's faithfulness, not just in your own life, but in the stories of other people. You know, in Revelation, it says, you know, we're going to conquer by our testimony. And part of testimony is not just Thanksgiving and what he's doing in our own life, but hearing the testimony and the fingerprints of God's faithfulness, seeing those in other people's lives. Because we get to know ourselves and know God through when we all show up. You know, when we all show up, we get a sense for how God shows up for us. And so remembering his character and his faithfulness, I think community is such a beautiful piece of that.
Yeah. And I think when we hear other people's testimonies, we can look at our own life and be like, oh my gosh, that was God in my life too. Or we're reminded of ways where we thought God was silent, but we're like, oh, that was God. Like that was the Holy Spirit moving, or this is how he showed up. And I just thought it was a coincidence or something like that. Like when we hear and see other people's testimonies, it brings truth to our own. And it's, I'm a big fan. I'm like you, raised in the church my whole life. And so like the thoughts of Ebenezer's, like having something that stands out, that's like this far the Lord has brought us. Our daughter's adopted and she came home after like a 3-year long process. And then our first trip with her, we got to go to the Grand Canyon. And I have a 13-year-old now, but he was a lot younger then, and he picked up a pine cone. He's our hoarder. He like is the kid that has like rocks in his pockets when he was little. And so he like brought home this pine cone, and I remember standing on the rim of the Grand Canyon being like, this far the Lord has brought us, like his faithfulness is like in our family. And oh my gosh. And so like that pine cone sits in our kitchen now because it's a little Ebenezer for me to remember that moment of the Grand Canyon, to think like, okay, but then it's now our job to share those stories of like, this is God's faithfulness. Like, I mean, the Grand Canyon alone is God's faithfulness and just how powerful he is. But like, let me tell you our story. Like, let me lean in. Like, let me show you how we celebrated. And then let me celebrate with you, because God's faithfulness is just going to ring true over and over again every time we share our testimonies. And so I love that you said that. I love that it's by sharing stories, and it's by that ritual of celebrating with the same people for the same things over and over and over. Like, it's just that to me is what friendship is really about.
Yes. And you brought up another good one that I also talk about. Collecting, making time for play, but I think that collecting, so similar. Sea glass is a through line in this second book. It's a practice that I was desperate when everything was closed at the beginning of the pandemic. I was desperate for something to do with my two wiggly boys, and we started, I'm not kidding, I think we were on every single beach on the Long Island Sound coastline, looking for sea glass. And we just sort of kept it. Mm-hmm. And it has been our family's way of connecting, of relaxing, of getting outside and enjoying the beauty of the day. But there's also something to this tangible, almost like a tangible metaphor of collecting God's goodness, having eyes to see, because you often find what you look for. And Having eyes to see those good things, even in the midst of a hard season. And I'm not kidding. We have, I wish I could show you, we have huge color coordinated jars of sea glass. We have thousands of pieces. And when I look back, I could cry telling you about it. I just see when I look back at and see all the jars of sea glass, I see the ways that God has woven friendship and fun and faithfulness and connectivity into our family over these 2 years. And it's such a gift. And I don't know that I would have that same stickiness to his faithfulness, like your pine cone in that moment, if I didn't have that visual or that collection. So if you're listening and there's a way for you to collect goodness in a season that's hard, I really encourage you to do that. Just be on the lookout for those things as a symbol of, oh, there are beautiful things happening, mm-hmm. even in the midst of very, very real and painful things.
Yeah. Oh. And then don't even get me started on like the metaphor of like the sea glass is smoothed and
oh yeah, like, that's in there too.
Don't even get me started.
Yes, because let me tell you, that is what was happening with me during the pandemic for sure.
Yes, those crushing waves and the sand and the exfoliation. I mean, there's a whole thing there. Nicole, the last question I always ask everyone, and I love this question. But if we believe that there's a season and a time for everything, and right now it's time for us to have coffee. But what is it time for in your own life right now? Like, what season are you in?
It's time to celebrate, and it's time to surrender the outcomes and, you know, try my best and look toward the future with an expectant heart for what God is going to do with my 5 loaves and 2 fishes and in the words in this book. So I just want to celebrate who he's been to me and how he's going to use the words that he gave me, because they're his words.
I love that. I like could cry thinking about like just celebrating those like what our offering, like celebrating our offering. And that's exactly what you're going to do. And I'm excited about that. Can you please, before we go, tell us about your first book, From Lost to Found?
Yes. So that is, I guess, the part one to this What If It's Wonderful book, but you don't have to read them in order. It's not like the second one won't make sense without the first. But that was really a journey of me realizing that even though I had been a follower of Jesus most of my life and would have called myself Christ dependent, I didn't realize that my faith and my relationship with God was being propped up by a lot of other comforts, like other people's approval, pleasing other people, my own hard work, having the praise of others and having the right title and the right amount of success in my life. And so when those were stripped away through a series of really hard events in our lives, I realized that, oh, my faith was my identity and sense of safety and security were not invested in my relationship with God. They were invested in all those other things. And what I found in that process when that misplaced hope was called out as fraud. So I love that book. It's called From Lost to Found, Giving Up What You Think You Want for What Will Set You Free. And I still hear from readers who just discovered it and are picking it up. And I hope it continues to get into others' hands, because it's definitely a story that changed my life.
I just love it so much. And that like just speaks so much to just, I mean, my heart, like it, honestly, like it's just, it's so similar of just like that, like constant, like checking of why do we do what we do? Like, who is it for? And what, like who my heart is always like, who am I aiming to get the glory here? And like, that's a question I ask God all the time. I'm like, who am I aiming to get the glory? Is it you or is it me? Because if it's me, then like, let's reset. And if it's you, okay, good. We're on the right path. So Nicole, thank you so much for having coffee with us today. This has been so, so great. So good for my heart today for sure.
No, thanks for having me, friend.
I really loved hearing Nicole's story, and I love the posture of having a surrendered heart to celebrate. I love knowing that fasting and prayer are spiritual disciplines, but so is celebrating and having a thankful heart, and how we can use all of that to focus our hearts and our posture with Jesus. Ugh, I'm just so thankful, and I really just love this conversation. So be sure to thank Nicole for hanging out with us and having coffee with us. You can find her on Instagram, and it's linked in the description below. And go check out her books. They are linked in the description below as well, or on itstimeforcoffeepod.com, where all of the show notes live. I hope that you have a great week. I cannot wait for next week when it's time for coffee. Thank you so much for joining us for coffee today. I'm so excited that you made time in your busy schedule to have coffee with me and my guest. If you want to connect on a deeper level, I hope that you will join our email community. The email community is a great way for us just to connect on a little bit deeper level. It's a place for us to email back and forth, to correspond about all things, and I hope that you will join us there. To make sure you never miss an episode, make sure you're following It's Time for Coffee podcast on your favorite podcast player. That way, each week when a new episode comes out, it'll pop right up in your queue and it'll be ready for you to listen to. And if you love today's episode, I would love for you to leave us a rating or review on your favorite player. You can just do that by hitting those stars or commenting about what you love about the episode. It makes my day, and I read every single one of them, and I love hearing how we can meet you right where you're at. So thanks for doing that, and if you haven't already, go do it for me. I would appreciate it. Okay, friend, I'll see you next week when it's time for coffee.